Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words and Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. It's the height of summer right now, and I hope everyone's celebrating it well with plenty of backyard food parties, plentiful meats on the grill. And more I'm seeing people opt for a smoker in addition to that grill, or maybe, as my guest here today, instead of a grill, as he did many years ago before starting his own barbecue joint in Austin, Texas. It is called Franklin Barbecue and only opened in 2009. They have really launched to the top of the pinnacle of barbecue awards in this country and won so much acclaim. And they have just put out a book just in time for your DIY barbecuing this summer. It is called Franklin Barbecue, of course. And it's Aaron Franklin. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
Thanks so much for joining us. I'm good.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so this is a really wonderful story that you have, and you put a lot of care into this book and to teach people how to make barbecue, like you did. So I wanted to ask a little bit about the rise of popularity in barbecuing, and barbecue is nothing new. People have been doing it in pits and backyards for ages. So I guess, first of all, do you think there is, given where you are in Texas, this newfound resurgence of interest, from the food paparazzi, if you will, in barbecue itself? And if so, then why do you think it has captured the attention of so many today?
That is a good question. There's definitely a huge barbecue movement, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But it has been around forever. It's certainly nothing new, and I'm not doing anything new and or exciting, really. But I think people kind of the way food trends go, back in the day of more processed foods and then mm-hmm. kind of lean towards crafty stuff. I think that, just kind of younger people getting excited about the craft of barbecue, is probably the biggest thing for barbecue getting so popular these days. And also internet stuff. I mean, if you look back in the day, when I cooked my first brisket, I got on the old dial-up, and I couldn't find anything to help me figure out how to cook a brisket.
I see.
And now you go anywhere, and some Yahoo's got YouTube videos. His name is Franklin. There's stuff all over the internet, so I think that has a pretty big part of it, too.
Interesting. So maybe before it was sort of you kind of had to see it and be there to do it and kind of take...
Well, yeah, you kind of had to be there. You kind of mm-hmm. had to... hang out around it, and then you get into the regionality of it,
mm-hmm.
and people that learned how to do barbecue, they were kind of taught by somebody, or maybe their parents did it or the grandparents did it, and it just kind of got passed down. But now, with just the way technology kind of works, and you can learn how to do anything you want to do no matter where you're at.
That's true. So many cultures have their own brand of barbecue, like a whole animal roast or asado in
Argentina, there you go.
Argentina. And, Korean barbecue, for instance. But your particular brand of barbecue is Central Texas, I believe?
It's real specific to Central Texas. It's kind of founded by German and Czech settlers. that's kind of how the Central Texas meat market style came to be, days before refrigeration, blah, 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 blah. But, yeah, so, I mean, the real basic German Czech barbecue is really just salt, pepper, cook it till it's tender, mm-hmm. and then cook it a little bit more, probably, and really no sauce. So
wow.
that's just about as pure as it gets.
That's right. Okay, so salt and pepper, and it's all about the wood, though, and the smoke and getting that right.
Yep.
Which
yep,
is...
and in Central Texas, we have toast oak, which is an indigenous oak wood in Central Texas.
Gotcha. I should preface this conversation by saying that I am from New York and New Jersey, and I actually did make a trip once to Lockhart and went to Smitty's, the legendary barbecue joint just outside of Austin, and it kind of blew my mind. So
it's a pretty cool place. I
yeah.
mean, you know, how many places in this country are still around where you could walk in, look at the fire on the floor, and just kind of hang out in the smokehouse, and all this meat's coming off. It's pretty cool. Pretty
yeah.
special place.
I was like, is that safe?
But,
no. One thing that I thought was really endearing is that barbecues tend to be a family business. Yours is run by yourself and your wife, Stacy,
right.
and it's named after your last name, and I see that a lot. You know, Franklin Barbecue and Smitty's or Kreutz's and... even here in New York, our friend Dan Delaney called his barbecue place Delaney Barbecue. So
mm-hmm.
is that just like a tradition, or is it from the deli tradition?
Yeah, it might be a bit of a tradition, you know, passed down from family member to family member to family member. That's kind of how it started. But really, we just couldn't come up with a better name.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we thought really long and hard about it, and I just wanted an anonymous name. I didn't want my name on it necessarily. You know, we hadn't opened yet. We didn't know if it was going to be any good. We had no idea.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so we kind of pretty much just ran out of time. And like, well, I guess we'll name it Franklin Barbecue. There you go.
I would love to hear that.
And in hindsight, I'm glad we did.
Mm-hmm.
It probably worked out for the best.
Yeah. Well, you also seem to, you write that you have a sort of infatuation with a certain roadside style of Americana from the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Yes.
Yeah, why is that? Tell me about barbecue from this time. Is that something that was like the height
of
barbecue?
I don't think it has anything to do with barbecue from that era necessarily, but I'm a huge fan of Americana stuff. I love Route 66, love Googie architecture, coffee shop style architecture, any of that stuff. I'm all over it. And really, you know, when we built the restaurant, built the trailer, we kind of just took stuff from our house. I mean, we love vintage stuff, anything from the 50s, 60s, streamlined modern, even before that. Huge fan. So
right.
I think it's just kind of more our personalities that kind of intertwine
yeah.
with the barbecue necessarily than the era in barbecue history.
Oh, that's so fun. Yeah, the sign for Franklin Barbecue is definitely in that aesthetic. It's really fun.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Well, one thing you do differently, you write them from many different barbecue joints, is that you use only humanely raised pastured meats. And that
Correct.
Was a decision, a very conscious decision to make. And it's more expensive for you. why is that?
Well, I mean, I don't want to eat something that's not all natural. I want to know that our animals are coming from a happy place and, you know, they're treated well. They don't have growth hormones, antibiotics, any of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I sure wouldn't want to run a restaurant serving anything but that. So, yeah, it's really just kind of a no-brainer.
That's great. You know, when meat is like the main product on the menu, it's like, yeah, your ingredients, you're taking the extra step there. So I really want to commend that here. Was that difficult to find enough supply? Because you guys go through thousands of pounds of meat a day. And
oh, my gosh. It is probably the hardest thing about my job is sourcing that stuff. You know, and it, a whole lot of work goes into that.
Yeah.
You know, as far as like our brisket, for example, that, I mean, that's obviously what we sell the most of. Right now, we're at about 32 to 34,000 pounds a month.
Wow.
And then you think of how many briskets come off of a cow. Well, you only get two,
mm-hmm.
left and right side. So then you think of how many cows that is. That's 100 briskets a day, 50 cows a day. That's a lot
of
meat. And to be able to source that and keep it all natural and keep it ethical is pretty gosh darn hard. So, yeah, I spend a lot of time on that. And we really only get them from one place.
Right.
But then... You know, if something happens to that one place, then what do you do? There's really just not enough supply around.
Well, obviously, you know, even though you are buying pretty significant amounts of meat. You're just an independent single restaurant, unlike a major chain. Like when they make these decisions, it really changes the whole system and creates more demand mm-hmm. for this type of meat. Do you see more farms offering and starting to, you know, supply this demand due to your restaurant?
Yeah, I think people try, but the problem is with us, if somebody new comes along, is that if we can't get everything, it's either all or nothing. You know, there's no, you're like, oh yeah, we'll get a half of our briskets from this guy, because they're all different. They're different animals. They're from different regions. They were harvested in a different place, so they were, you know, fabbed in a slightly different way. So really, for consistency purposes, we only get stuff from one place. But yeah, I mean, there are tons of ranches that are doing all natural stuff. And they're pretty small, and that's where we get our other meats from. Like, our beef ribs come from a place in Cameron, Texas, called 44 Farms. You know, our ribs come from a couple different places. So, you know, there's always that, but I think a lot of people do try to do that stuff. But then you throw in the corporate stuff, like chains. That, like, our all-natural stuff isn't necessarily affected by commodity stuff, but yet it is a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's certainly influenced by it. But, yeah, I mean, say, like, you take Arby's with this brisket sandwich that they did. I don't remember what the numbers were, but it was outrageous how much meat they were going through on this stuff. And it jacked up prices. And then you figure, you know, if these guys are going to sell like a million sandwiches with brisket, then it's going to take 3 years to reflect, more cows. So by the time they're, you know, they're born, blah, 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 you take them to harvest. That's about a 3-year period. So then the prices kind of fluctuate. And, you know, so yeah, it gets a little bit tricky for sure.
Brisket prices have just skyrocketed. It's unbelievable. It used to be that brisket was the cheapest, inexpensive cut, which is why it had to be, you know, cooked so laboriously to render it good. But nowadays, that's the most expensive cut. How ironic.
It's like 10,000 spoons when all you need is a knife. it's ironic, don't you think?
Well, you know, it's like, you know, waves and trends and I don't know what, but, you know, it used to be that pork belly was like so inexpensive. Well, it was actually not even found in most American butcher shops because it wasn't something people wanted to buy. But nowadays here, that's pretty expensive too. So,
yeah, well, it just kind of goes with, you know, if something kind of gets more popular, jack up the prices on this, start trimming this a certain way, kind of butchers start changing the way they do stuff to go with, you know, retail markets. But it all makes sense.
Hey.
It's kind of a bummer for a place that only sells meat and only sells, you know, 4 different types of meat.
I'm curious, are you going to try different cuts? Are you going to smoke maybe, offal next or something?
That sounds awful. No, not really. I mean, we're a barbecue place, and in Texas, you absolutely have to do brisket. It would be cool to kind of offset that a little bit, but it would be such a logistical nightmare at the restaurant. Every piece of meat has a dedicated spot on a cooker, and if you throw in something else, it just kind of throws a wrench in the whole system.
I see.
And then you look at service, and where's it going to get held? How's it going to get cut? You know, it kind of, that stuff kind of, we're so busy for that 5-hour period during service that just even having like a special like beef ribs on the menu just kind of slows down the line by about 3 seconds a customer, but it averages out too. So then there's kind of that stuff to figure out.
Wow, really interesting.
I do like to play with stuff. I think we might start doing chicken pretty soon.
Oh, cool.
Just for fun. And then, you know, we do specials. We do beef ribs on Saturdays, and sometimes I'll do prime rib or something like that. So if something good comes along from a good ranch,
that's a good little highlight for things up to. Coming up, we're going to cut to a quick little commercial and musical interlude, but we'll be right back chatting more.
Listening to Intrigue by Obesity. This is Eat Your Words on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
We are students at Girls Prep, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words, and my guest today is Aaron Franklin, who has just written the Franklin Barbecue, a Meat Smoking Manifesto book, which is a delightful cookbook. And thanks so much for taking the time out of your busy day. I love that you break down your day beginning at 2 a.m., tending the smoker, and then going on to, I don't know, a whole lot of stuff before the whole day is done. So, wow, thank you for taking the time out. I can't imagine the lunch lines right now.
Well, you're very welcome.
So you also, you came into this, your parents had a barbecue restaurant for a while when you're growing up, but you didn't really like decide right then to become a barbecue pit master. It was after doing music. You were playing in several bands throughout the years.
Yep.
Yeah, so you write also that playing in a band at a show is similar to putting on a barbecue. There's a little bit of synergy there.
Totally the same thing.
Really? How so?
I think so. And, because you think of it, if you're in a band, you're gonna practice a little bit. You're gonna learn how to do whatever instrument you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna get good at it. Then you're pretty much, working up to a show. If you're gonna go on tour, you're gonna practice. If you're gonna record an album, you practice. You go on tour. You just play as much as you possibly can. It's the same thing with barbecue. You just barbecue as much as you can. Practice makes almost perfect, hopefully. And then by the time you finally get there, service, which is, opening up for the day, you're on stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's go time. So, yeah, it's pretty much the same thing. And the kind of the way that I've always been in bands and the bands have been run, it's pretty much how we run our kitchen and our whole restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the way that we do the restaurant is really played in line with playing music.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. And there's a lot of passion that goes into it. I also think that there's something similar about having the guts to think that you're going to, make it as a musician or as a intrepid restaurateur. So congrats for...
Well, I think, as far as like opening up or like, playing in a band, I think if you just kind of follow your heart and you do mm-hmm. something that you're proud of, who cares if you're busy or not? Who cares? Like, if you can be a little bit just busy enough to pay your bills, you've succeeded. Like, that's great. As long as you stay in business. And kind of the same thing with a band. I mean, if you can play in a band and you're enjoying it, that's really what it's about. I think it's more about a quality of life than anything.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you can
I think it would be interesting to go into something and be like, I'm going to be awesome at this, and I'm going to take over the world.
Right.
That seems a little strange.
Right.
Just do what makes you happy.
Yeah, so when you opened Franklin Barbecue, it wasn't about becoming like the most critically acclaimed barbecue restaurant. It was about having a family business, doing something that you loved.
And yep, absolutely.
And then this on the side just sort of happened.
Turns out we got really busy.
Yeah. No, but really, how did you become so good at the craft of barbecue?
Well, I don't really know that we are that good at it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think everybody's good at certain things, and everybody's kind of, it's barbecue. Anybody can have a bad day, and anybody can have a pretty good day. I think being consistent and being able to recognize when you mess up or recognize when you do something really well and just kind of find it a groove. I mean, that's just how barbecue is. I mean, you cook it every day. Eventually, you're going to kind of get a groove and get pretty good at it.
That's really cool.
And I think,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I love that you kind of like state in the beginning of the sort of recipe section that, barbecue, there's no one exact formula or recipe that you should follow because there's so many variables, and it's just that, it's a long process, starting with the choosing of meat, and, there's no exact formula for this type of food.
Yeah, there is no recipe other than barbecue sauce that will actually work for barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all, I mean, you've got a fire that's variable, you've got a piece of meat that could be little, it could be big, it could be thin, it could be thick, it could be fatty, it could be lean. Like how, like, you really have to develop a feel for these things. It's more of a craft
right.
than being able to follow a black and white recipe, which is why that book actually almost didn't have any recipes in it at all.
Let's talk about those sauces. You do have a few recipes for sauces. And you said earlier, though, that traditionally the Texas style, you don't have sauce, or what's up with that?
You know, I mean, kind of the consensus is in Central Texas, if you have to put sauce on it, it must be pretty bad.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, you're trying to cover up something. You're trying to cover up, you know, just maybe not a great cook, mm-hmm. which is fine. I mean, I like chopped beef. It's great. Mm-hmm. I ate a sandwich yesterday.
Yeah, if it's seasoned.
So anyway, but yeah, so we have sauce. And, you know, I figure if you're going to have sauces, you might as well make them pretty good.
I like that you have an espresso barbecue sauce. That sounds like a really nice little complement there with the smokiness and then the earthiness of espresso.
I think so.
Yeah. And you're an espresso fanatic, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I consume the espresso many times a day.
Let's talk a moment about sides. I get the sense that there's this general lack of interest among true barbecue people in sides in general.
Man, I think you nailed it. There is definitely a lack of interest in sides.
I mean, you write in your side section, which, by the way, only has three recipes. That's even less than the sauces.
Yeah. I mean, we just do three sides.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm not going to gussy up a book just with, you know, dinky recipes.
It sounded kind of reluctant. section.
Yep. I mean, I love the beans that we do at the restaurant. They're super flavorful. Those beans are, I think, is totally my favorite side. Potato salad's great, but it's really just potato salad. I mean, it's mayonnaise, mustard, pickles, and salt and pepper. It's not rocket science. So yeah I think for a lot of restaurants, you know, like one of the most insulting things you could hear about a restaurant is like, oh yeah, how was that place? Oh man, the coleslaw was delicious.
Ooh.
God, that burns.
Okay, you know, so. I can see it. So you think that like by putting more attention into the sides, that would take something away, or that people would think that your meat isn't as good?
I kind of think so. I mean, you work so hard to cook a piece of meat, and you know, you lost a night's worth of sleep. You've been cooking this thing for 16 hours, watching a fire.
Yeah.
And then the potato salad's a good thing on the menu.
Ooh.
That would kind of hurt your feelings a little bit.
Yeah, but if I may play devil's advocate a moment, you know, what about like complementing and brightening those flavors in the barbecue by surrounding it with complementary things?
Yeah.
Harmony.
I think it's great. Although it does go a little bit against the German Czech meat market style.
Okay.
Because that's, you know, just served on butcher paper traditionally. And in fact, you know, like you went to Smitty's. A lot of those Lockhart places don't even have sides.
Oh, I gotta say, again, as a total Yankee, like, I really liked Smitty's. I like the sausages. I like the barbecue. I thought the sides really stank. Like, they were really bad. And I was, like, shocked that about this, like, you know, dichotomy, like, this cognitive dissonance between the two foods. I thought it was a missed opportunity, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I think from, like, the perspective of a you know, grumpy old barbecue guy,
mm-hmm.
I think if you were inside the kitchen cooking on a stove trying to make really good sides, you probably weren't watching your fire very well.
I see.
Because it's not like a full kitchen. Like, you look at a traditional kitchen, you've got prep guys, you've got, you know, the people doing this, you've got all these different stations. You don't have that with barbecues. You've got your two hands, probably a shovel, and a fire.
Mm.
And you do what you can with that fire, you know? But, I mean, at the end of the day, your number one goal is to make really good barbecue.
Right.
So, and sides are cool, and they're certainly complimentary, and sauce is good sometimes, and it's certainly complimentary, and it should be. But, you know, your number one, your eye on the prize is that piece of meat.
Mm-hmm. That's the point of interest here. Well, you're certainly doing it. And, so, coming up next on Around the Pike, you just released a book. Do you have any plans for, I don't know, another Franklin barbecue? Perhaps in,
no,
I don't know,
no,
Brooklyn?
No, boy, one is enough.
Really?
Good lordy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just that one place, keep it as good as we can, and just keep that restaurant running good. That's not pretty much our number one goal.
You're not going to start a chain? Little restaurant empire? No?
No.
Wow.
Just the one.
Wow, that's pretty, That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and again, with barbecue, you can't replicate that. Whoever's watching that fire is what it's going to taste like. So you wouldn't be able, without, you know, full computer automation, you wouldn't really be able to replicate anything. And that's kind of the craft of it. I mean, you can't take a brewmaster from a, you know, from a brewery and take them somewhere else and expect everything to taste the same, you know.
Right, because you can't be in two cities. Yeah, so you're basically like at your fire pits every day. You see everything that goes through there.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm in and out. Mm-hmm. I do all meat through the place, and we weld barbecue pits, and I do a million other things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm in and out. If I'm not watching the fires, I'm probably in the kitchen, or I'm out back doing some welding, or I'm on the roof fixing a vent hood, or I'm out front during service, or I have omnipresence in that building.
I love that.
All the time.
You write, at one point you wrote something like, yeah, and I spend my day, I'm usually putting out fires here, or like, and then I realized that you were actually talking about tending fires and actually putting out fires. I was like, oh, that's really funny.
Well, you know, maybe a small play on words.
Well, hey, Aaron, thank you so much for this chat. It's really eye-opening. I can't wait to try to smoke a little bit better, thanks to your book.
Well,
here.
It's a filthy habit. Be careful.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that smoked chicken you're going to have at the restaurant next time.
It might turn out pretty good.
Cool. All right. Well, cool.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks so much, Aaron. Thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.